see some serious shit.
Good evening, everybody, and it's a return to classic style Movie Moan this week. It's no special show, just good reviews and bad news. But one thing that does make it special, we've got a brand new special guest, and new to our show, but one that I know Jamie's been trying to bag for us for a while. Will you please welcome, drumroll please, writer for ComingSoon.net, we're talking big league here, Mr. Ed Douglas. Hello, sir.
Oh, well, thanks a lot. That's quite an introduction, and I don't know about Big League. I mean, I don't know.
You guys are a very highly watched site.
It's a big site. I've been there for many years, but I don't know. I still kind of just doing a job, so.
Oh, he's like a little mini Superman, isn't he? We're all part of the same team. Good night. Well, not quite. We're not there yet. Also, that voice you hear, the classic interrupted shtick from Louisiana, it's Jamie Williams.
Why wouldn't I interrupt people? Because that's just who I am.
Before we recorded, we were talking about interrupting etiquette on here, which is something we like to do every week because sometimes the debates can get a little heated. But Justin's not here this week, so hopefully we should have harmony. That was a great show, though, that we had last week on the DC stuff. And thanks for everybody's comments once again because it was a great reception to that. And, you know, if... Warner Brothers gets their act together. Hopefully we can do a sequel to that once we actually have some movement. But until then, it's just the three of us tonight. Christina can't be with us. It's her mother's birthday, so I'm sure you can understand. And Captain Ed Hocken has not joined us for the show. But you will be able to hear him next week in one form or another when we get back to our pieces on Summer Lovin', the summer blockbusters of old. And we've got a real treat for you. RoboCop 2! So that's a great reason for you to not listen to next week's show. But if you do, you'll hear some great commentary from Captain Hocken. For this week, though, we've just got reviews and we've got some news that I really don't want to talk about, but it's part of the job. And we've also got the new James Bond trailer, which, of course, I really, really do. But let's start with our reviews on Total Recall. So, lucky me, I don't get to see the remake of Total Recall, that is if I choose to see it at all, for another couple of weeks. I think it's not out for another 3 weeks here. It's the last film of the summer for us. We'll start with our special guest, Edward. Does it deserve to be the crowning final capper of the summer in your opinion?
Well, you guys get the Olympics for the next few weeks, so you guys have a lot of stuff going on there. I think you know, you're lucky getting any movies at all this summer with all the Olympics and everything else going on over there. But you know, it's funny. It's you know, I mean, I had high hopes for it. I kind of knew that it was going to get trashed by all the critics because it's a remake and because everyone loves the original movie. You know, I don't know if it really deserves that much love. I mean, I liked it a lot. But I actually, you know, it's funny. I actually thought it was a decent movie, decently made movie. I actually liked the cast and... The big thing is that basically it's living under the shadow of a really good movie from the 90s that people really like, so.
Jamie?
I mean, I didn't think it was terrible, it was just kind of, I thought it was just really bland. I mean, it was exactly when you watched the trailer, that was my reaction. I don't even know if we did the box prediction for that week, if we included it for that show, but.
We did. We said it would bomb.
We did.
Much.
It did bomb this weekend, actually.
Kind of, yeah. Well, I mean, it only did a little bit less than it was supposed to do. I mean, people were thinking 30 million.
Yeah, that was too high. That was, I read those numbers. I was like, oof, no, not 30. Yeah. I just couldn't get the vibe.
I think it could have done it. If not, I think the Olympics hurt it more than anything. Maybe Dark Knight did a little bit because people have been waiting.
Maybe.
I think everyone, you know what I mean? I'm beginning to think that even Bourne might have been moved. I mean, I think it's funny. I think Universal, I'm bringing up the topic a little bit, but I think Universal might become the winner of the summer because they smart enough to move Ted earlier. Mm-hmm. They're smart enough to Bourne back a week. And they might end up, like, cleaning up because they have those two little, like, moves. They got away from the Dark Knight. They moved Tedder's open the week before the Dark Knight. It would have tailed off.
It would have died. It would have been dead immediately. No doubt about that. Yeah, and the moment they did that, they moved it right after G.I. Joe 2 fell apart or whatever you want to say. I knew it was going to be a huge hit. I was like, okay, they're confident. They know they've got something.
But back to Total Recall, I mean, it's funny.
Yeah, it's that good, isn't it? You just one sentence review from both of you.
Well, the funny thing is that, like, Jamie said it was bland, and I cannot imagine people watch this movie and say it's bland. It's just like, I saw another review where someone was complaining about having too much action, an action movie having too much action.
That's silly. Like, that, yeah, I agree with you on that.
I don't know about being bland. I thought the action was pretty damn good. I mean, I thought that, like, what they did with the CG, the environments, and just kind of like making the action. I thought the action was actually pretty exciting, maybe even better than the original movie in some ways. But my biggest complaint is that they literally ripped off the Bourne identity. It literally is the Bourne identity, in the future, because like that's they kind of like changed a bit, so it was more like the Bourne identity than it was the original Total Recall. And there was actually actual scenes in the movie that were, taken from Bourne Identity.
Oh, like, yeah, like the scene where he, like, the trailer shot where, like, he beats up the bad guys in the suits and stuff. Yeah, that's totally from the – I remember seeing the trailer for Bourne Identity. He did that, and that's, like, what made you want to see the movie.
There's that, but then also the other one was he goes to the bank and he has the box in the bank, and he had all the passports inside it. That was also Bourne Identity. That's exactly what Jason Bourne did. He had, like, that bank vault where he, had all his identities on passports, and they did the exact same thing in Total Recall. So I thought that was a little bit, it was just a little bit weird because the movie was already so derivative of not only the original Total Recall, but other, Blade Runner and all these other movies, and then they threw in the Bourne Identity on top of that. But that's my biggest complaint with it.
Well, it's not so much the bland thing, it's just, maybe I should use the wrong word, but I was just bored. I mean, like, and I agree with you, the action, there's nothing wrong with the action, and I will say performance-wise, I thought Kate Beckinsale was the best thing apart of the whole movie. I thought she was the one relishing in what the part she had. She was, and I'm not really a big fan of hers, but I thought she actually came off the best in the movie.
She had the best part, because funny, I think Sharon Stone's part was much smaller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
Because her husband directed it, they really made the character, that character was actually, like, she was there the entire movie, kind of, she was almost like the Terminator. She was constantly just showing up and going after them, and like, they couldn't kill her, and she just kept coming back and back and back, and it was fine, because she was great. But, I mean, yeah, Colin Farrell, I liked him, I didn't love him.
There's thing about, like, Colin Farrell, though, it's like, there's like a line in the movie where she goes like, I marry a guy like you, and it's like, what kind of statement is that? Like, that's so silly. It's like Colin Farrell is a good-looking guy, and it's just like, I mean, my brother-in-law looks like Colin Farrell. No one cares, but if you ever wanted to know that, you'd know. He's not Irish or anything, I don't think. But the thing about it is, like, there's nothing about Colin Farrell that's, like, endearing, if it makes any sense. He's not really, I don't think he's that likable. He doesn't have the charm of Arnold. And you look at the first movie, and there's such a conviction to Arnold's performance in Total Recall. I think that's his best, that's actually Arnold's best performance as an actor is Total Recall.
Hetero. Brunette. Athletic. Sleazy. Demure.
I think the problem is that if they made this movie under a different title, and they changed the names, and changed a couple different things, they probably could have gotten away with making a brand new sci-fi action movie, and everyone would have liked it. No, I'm sure of it. I'm sure of it. There's the shadow of the original movie is just like, makes it impossible for people to see this movie without, which is kind of the reason they did it. They did it because they had this title, and they wanted to be able to, get people to show up.
It had brand name recognition.
Well, let me ask a question on that then, because one of the major criticisms I've read in all of the reviews that I've come across is that the movie asks for a comparison. It brings it on itself because it has too many damn callbacks to the original.
There's one huge callback that I did groan at. Like, I didn't mind most of them, but like, actually, there's one scene at the beginning where they're going through the zero gravity thing, which I never understood. I don't know about you, Ed. I could not get that across, what the hell that meant. Explaining the plot and all that stuff. But he's reading The Spy Who Loved Me by Ian Fleming. And I just rolled my eyes. Really?
Was that a callback? I don't remember that in the original. Was that
no, not that it was a callback to the original. It was something I just noticed. I was like, oh, that's subtle. But no, the big callback to the original that did make me groan was the Fat Lady.
Fat Lady, yeah. I actually thought that was kind of funny. But I don't think, it's funny. I don't think there was as many obvious callbacks as, like, for instance, Rise of the Planet of the Apes last year, that had very specific, lines from the Planet of the Apes. This one didn't have, they could have used, like, a lot more lines, like, I want a divorce. They didn't use that one in this one. And they could have done a lot more. I actually laughed at the Fat Lady. I thought that was kind of funny, kind of throwing it's funny, I don't want to ruin the movie for Philip, but I feel like, that the Fat Lady was kind of a funny thing, because you kind of, like, knew who it was, and then they threw off a little bit of a, threw you off a little bit. But I thought that was funny. I don't know.
Fair enough.
I wouldn't worry about whether I'm going to see it or not, and I certainly wouldn't worry about spoilers. Well, I might give it a go, but what the hell's the plot? You've taken Mars out of it, and Mars was instrumental to the plot of the original about Mars getting gear and all of that stuff. So, you just send it back on Earth. I know there's still, a government to overthrow, because I know that Bill Nye's, like, the Quarto guy, but he's not called Quarto in this. So what's the What's the plot? You might as well tell me.
Well, the thing is, the difference is there's no Earth and Mars, but what they do is they have two sections of Earth. It's like the really poor section of Earth and the really rich section of Earth, and they basically created a transport between the two sections, which is kind of like a big part of the big set pieces. Like the big set pieces are set on that, and it's just kind of a really cool concept. But I mean, yeah, they got rid of Mars. I don't know if they got rid of Mars for the same reason Disney got rid of Mars in John Carter, but it was just definitely. It was just like basically like they have two different locations. The thing which kind of bugs me is that like anyone who knows the plot for Elysium coming out next year is very similar. There's a lot of similarities which might get a lot of people like. It's really funny. I think if people praise Elysium and it's the same movie as Total Recall, I'll be really pissed off. I'm telling you right now.
The thing that really worked about the original Total Recall for me as an adult after watching it for many years as a child, because I had irresponsible parents, was that it really, really, in a smart way, knew how to play the absurdity of the situation in those first 5 minutes. You look at it, Arnold Schwarzenegger, a guy who looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger in the prime of his movie career with those huge muscles and those protein shakes and whatever. He's living in what looks like a lovely apartment. He has Sharon Stone for a wife, and yet he's a lowly construction worker. Now, what I was wondering was, at the start of this Total Recall, does it even try to attempt that level of absurdity in setting up the Doug Quaid's life as a sham, or does it play it in a completely different way?
Well, I mean, he's like a factory worker.
Yeah.
But he has his hot wife, and it's not really a funny thing. It's not like, you can believe he's a factory worker and he has that wife, I think.
I thought it would be interesting to see the remake because in a way, it seems to be like one kind of version of what the film the original 1990 film could have been, because of course before Arnold got the part, it was going to be Patrick Swayze and a David Cronenberg film, or there were a couple of directors it went through, but it was going to be a normal guy in a normal job, and then he finds out that actually it's all manufactured and he actually lives this explosive fantastical life. And I just always felt like, yeah, it would have been interesting, but the way getting Arnold was just one of those wonderful happy accidents that actually just enriches the whole thing, because the audience is clued in right from the start that there's no way this is real. It's a complete absurdity. And I just feel like, maybe I'm wrong, but if you actually do have Doug Quaid as a normal guy in a normal life that you can believe in, then you're losing something there. There's an element to it that, I don't know. So, because I've seen that scene. I saw it last year where, he suddenly realizes he's got kung fu skills and takes out all the robots in one shot. I've seen that bit. And even then,
that's the Bourne Identity thing. It's a similar thing where he doesn't know who he is. And then all of a sudden he takes out all these guys and it's like, oh, something's going on. And I think it's funny. He Colin Farrell doesn't he isn't an action hero per se in this movie. I mean, he doesn't, he seems like every situation he gets into, he seems like he's in a, oh no, another bad situation. And he has to kind of, he has to try to get out of it. And he's kind of he has a lot of resources, but it's not like Arnold Schwarzenegger, who's like an action hero. You can see him, when he shows up and you have like five guys around him, he'll take him out. Colin Farrell, you don't really kind of expect it so much.
Well, you've mentioned Bourne several times, Edward, and at the risk of having Universal's trained snipers all over you, what the hell, it's your life I'm risking. If I may be able to ask you, apparently you've seen The Bourne Legacy. Are you allowed to say anything about it at this stage? The only reason we ask is that I can't speak for Jamie, but I had faith in this one. I actually liked the trailers. I thought, this could be good. I don't think people will give it a chance because it's not Matt Damon, but I think one of the great ironies of the summer could be this could actually be a damn good film. Was I right?
I thought so. I can tell some people will be disappointed because it's less action. It's less action than the third movie. But it's in the first movie. It's actually less action than, I guess, all three movies. But it's very smart, and it sets stuff up for what could be very cool movies. So I will say there's less action, but it's very smartly written, very clever ideas, and I really like Jeremy Renner and Rachel Weisz. So I think I think by the time it gets to the end, there's enough action at the end that people will get really excited about seeing more.
I'm not against the idea of the movie, like, creatively, but it's just, like, commercially, I just think it's suicidal. You know, it's like saying, let's do a Batman movie, but we're not going to put Batman in it. It's like, let's call it
And
Jason
that might
Bourne.
Happen.
Let's make a Jason Bourne movie, but he's not going to be in it. We're just going to reference him a lot. And, yeah, that's the other thing I want to ask you, sir, is, like, is the reference to Jason Bourne as heavy as it has been in the advertisement?
It's about, I would say, okay, it's a two-hour movie. It's 2 hours plus. I would say there's maybe 10 minutes of referencing Jason Bourne, but it also, like for instance, it has some of the characters from the last movie and some of the things. It's really weird. It's sort of like a, like, if you can imagine what is going on off-camera for the third movie, for Ultimatum, this is that movie. This is basically what's going on off-camera for Bourne Ultimatum. So someone makes a phone call, and in Bourne Ultimatum, this is showing the other side of the phone call.
Well, Bourne Ultimatum did that, actually, with stuff from Legacy. Or not Legacy, excuse me, from, what's the second one? Supremacy, like, at a certain point. So that was actually, I think that was a really cool idea, actually. Kind of like what Zemeckis did with Back to the Future 2. Let's go into the first one. Let's see the first one from another angle. So that's a really cool idea. Actually, the other question I had, go ahead.
I was going to say, that's what they do here. So this one sort of overlaps with Ultimatum. And so Jason Bourne is referenced, and he's kind of a part of the story. But they never actually show him. I think they show him once, like in the commercial, that one picture they show of him.
Yeah.
That's all they show in the movie.
And that cost Universal $10 million for his likeness, by the way. No. Actually, the other thing I will say to this movie's benefit, I think, is we're used to now two movies with the Greengrass style of direction, and then we had Doug Liman style direction with the first film. It's actually kind of good that we get someone who is not aping either one of their – I get the impression that Tony Gilroy is not going to be doing his version of Liman or Greengrass direction-wise, if that makes any sense.
Oh, you know, you're absolutely right. And he, it's funny, I saw it on Thursday, and he and Tony Gilroy did a little Q&A afterwards, and I actually asked him about that specifically. And he has Robert Elswit, who's like an Oscar-winning, cinematographer, and you can tell. The movie looks really good. It doesn't look like a Greengrass, like chopped up, you know, handy cam kind of thing. It's very different.
Cool.
I think people will like it. I think it's a little slow to begin with. It takes some getting used to, but I mean, I think it does, you know, it does fit in with the other three movies enough that people will like it.
Well, speaking of which, I saw finally Ted this weekend. It's unfortunately one of the side effects of having a Brit do this show is that sometimes we don't get movies at the same time as the States. Still haven't got Brave. We're not getting Bourne next week. We're getting it the week after. It's going head-to-head with Expendables 2. Yes, we're getting Skyfall early, and that will make up somewhat, but it's taken this long for Ted to come out. It came out this weekend. I saw it. God damn, that was a treat. Obviously, as a Flash Gordon fan, it spoke directly to me, and I had no idea that it was going to go that far with the Flash Gordon references. It starts with them just watching the movie on TV, and you think it's just a little thing that they've thrown in, because obviously Seth MacFarlane loves the movie. Boy, does he love that movie. That's clearly shown throughout the movie, but it just goes so much further. I almost don't want to spoil that for people who still haven't seen it, but, you see a movie with an audience, and I saw it with a packed house, we're laughing like drains, but, you know, when you're seeing it in the cold loneliness of your home with your Blu-ray player, are you going to laugh once again? I don't know if I'm going to laugh again, but I tell you what, I'm going to see it again, and I'm going to enjoy it again, and the reason being is that, absurd as it sounds, the relationship between this guy and this computer-generated bear is actually extremely credible. I just loved watching them talk as people, as friends. I actually believed in their relationship, and even further, it wasn't till after the movie that I realized, wait a second, that bear isn't real. It's an effect. It's a computer-generated effect, and yet there is not a single shot in that movie where I actually thought of him as a special effect. And just on that basis, I've got to tell you, Ted's actually a really great achievement in visual effects. I think it deserves to be putting nominations up there with movies like The Avengers and whatnot. I really do. It's a believable character. And I was kind of just blown away just by, for that reason. But also, I had some problems with it, and we'll get to that in a sec. But overall, death to Ming. Awesome. Edward.
Yeah, I really liked it when I saw it, which I guess now is probably about a month and a half or more. Yeah. It was a while ago, yeah. But I definitely liked it a lot. I totally agree about the character of Ted being, like, so, I mean, I actually compared it to Andy Serkis' performance in Rise of the Planet of the Apes, because Seth MacFarlane, I'm guessing, was on set. I don't know if he did any performance capture, but, like, just creating that character and making, you know, the other actors kind of, you know, perform opposite of that was pretty impressive. And I actually thought it was really funny. I think it kind of fell apart towards the end a little bit because it just kind of turned into a big kind of a chase kind of thing. But, I mean, I think it's really good, you know, feature film debut by Seth MacFarlane. I think he's going places.
He totally is going places film-wise. I actually kind of wonder if, like, we might start seeing some of his shows kind of get axed. He might just to segue into films now, because this is a hell of a commercial debut. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say Family Guy, they've already been talking about doing a movie. I just don't know if it's going to be like The Simpsons, where it just takes forever to finally get something they approve, but they've talked about it.
They're going to definitely do a Family Guy movie eventually. I have no doubt about that. I don't know. I mean, I didn't mind the Simpsons movie. Actually, the thing about Ted, we have to give a lot of credit to, is like also Mark Wahlberg is like, I mean, I love making fun of him all the time, but the guy's actually a really good actor, and like he is committed to that teddy bear being real more than any other actor in that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, particularly when he gives the line, "Hello, police? Yeah, someone's my teddy bear." I laugh every time I hit that line. I mean, there's a, you know, that's a lot of conviction to say that line, and goddamn, does he pull it off. There's some really,
not to mention sing All Time High to a crowd of people. That's the worst song you can pick, man. Not because it's a bad song, it's a great song, but you had to have perfect pitch to be going to sing All Time High.
I have been in the car with some friends, and we have tried to sing it.
Oh, God.
Sober, and yeah, it did not end well. I think Mark Wahlberg, it's safe to say, did a better job than we did in the car. My jeez.
I think Mark Wahlberg has to start doing comedy like constantly. He's like Paul Rudd, where he does these dramatic roles in these big like crime action movies, but like he's just so much funnier when you put him into weird situations like that. Like in what was that movie with Steve Carell and Tina Fey?
Date Night.
Yeah, he was hilarious in that. He just kind of like just showed up and did some lines. He was hilarious. He's just like so much funnier when he's not taking himself too seriously.
See, that's what I think Christian Bale should do next. Not to get off topic here, but like I think he should do a Seth MacFarlane comedy.
Oh, totally. I agree. I think Christian Bale needs to lighten up, and I think a comedy would definitely help.
But the only frustrating thing about Ted is that it is so close. Like, I'll give it an 8 out of 10, but it could have so easily hit a 9 or a 10. It could have been perfect if it weren't for the fact that it has to fall back on the same bullshit cliches that we've had in a billion workplace comedies and a billion rom-coms. Why do we have to have another movie with the creepy asshole boss and the one-dimensional bitchy workplace girls and the one scene at where Marky Mark works where you have this pointless little aside about Patrick Warburton, one of my favourite comedic actors, and someone who shouldn't be wasted like this, making a joke about the fact that he's gay, just so you can set up a not-funny-at-all Ryan Reynolds cameo. It would be funny if Ryan Reynolds is a huge star, but he isn't, unfortunately. So it just, compared to everything else in the movie, that's just like a big loud thud. And moments like that count when you're hitting every other joke with just perfect trajectory.
Boy, you just spoiled the Ryan Reynolds cameo. I can't believe you just spoiled that. That was one of the funny spoilers which people have kind of kept under wraps, I thought. I don't know. But yeah, I kind of was bothered by that also. But I think that's also kind of partially what Seth MacFarlane does on Family Guy, and I think it's kind of one of the things where he has a lot on Family Guy. They have a lot of kind of jokes like that. I thought it was unnecessary, but I think it was kind of keeping in the tone of his shows by just having those kind of like little running jokes along the side.
It worked for the most part. There were a couple of jokes that just didn't work, including the recreation of the airplane shot, which I've seen the movie twice, and both times to packed audiences. I'll add, so to give you an idea how great it's doing. But yeah, that bit always just like, really, we're going to recreate a scene that was recreating a scene from a scene. I mean, that was like, guys, stop it. And then like they did the cutaway of the fart joke because it was, you know, there's a part of me that like I said to a friend of ours from another website, Pietro over Daily Blam, I was like, you know, I kind of hope that he that McFarlane, there's a part of me that thinks that he should just stop while he's ahead, because it's like, it worked great now, but I feel like he's, you know, when you get successful at something, you generally get more, like, if it's successful, you either do the same thing over, you just get more ambitious, or you just do flat out the same. And I feel like he's just going to do the same thing over and over, and has more Family Guy oriented jokes. And it worked well for Ted, but I have a feeling that we're going to, I mean, I don't know. I just, maybe I'm thinking too far ahead on that one, but I don't know. We'll see. It's certainly a debut, a hell of a debut.
I was going to say, it's going to be a hard act to follow, but what I also really appreciated about the film was that everybody knows the bear's real. Like,
I love that.
I went into this pretty spoiler-free, and I was worried that there was going to be a lot of crazy hijinks of hiding the bear and Toy Story-type stuff and parodies on that, but it's not like that at all. I do think the idea of making Ted a washed-up celebrity ends up being pretty pointless, because not much of a deal is played out with it, really, except for the fact that, obviously, Giovanni Ribisi's this crazy stalker guy. But apart
that was creepy. That was supposed to be funny, but, like, and my audience laughed.
It's a bit too good, isn't it?
It was like... Honestly, guys, it was like Jonathan Demme directed it. It was like, this is not funny. Him dancing to Tiffany. It's just like, it was not funny. I did expect him to say, do you want to fuck me? I'd fuck me. I mean, it was creepy and not funny creepy.
Oh, I don't know. I thought that was hilarious. I thought that actually got one of the biggest laughs on the show.
People laugh. I'm just sitting there going, ugh.
Yeah, but guys, by the way, do you know that there's been talk already of a sequel to Ted? Have you guys heard this at all?
Yes.
Do you think he would actually do it? Do you think there's actually a story to do another story with these characters? Or do you think
I've thought of one.
Really?
No, I mean, I've not written a treatment or anything, but the only thing I can possibly see them doing at this point, of course, is that there's other animated toys out there, and you really get into the whole fucked up Toy Story R-rated thing, and there's potential there, but overall, no, I don't want a sequel.
That would do huge, though. I mean, I tell you, man, I'm curious about you guys' screening. When I first saw an opening night, like, the opening bit where, like, they're at Christmas and, like, they're opening up their stuff, like, half the audience was lit up just seeing the old toys from their childhood.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like that quickly, the movie had them that quickly. Oh, you know, it was like, what was it? Like, oh my God, Cabbage Packs, Nintendo. I heard all that in my audience, man. It's
not
like,
to mention totally do that. Patrick Stewart making a joke about beating up Jewish children. What the fuck?
That was at CinemaCon. They actually showed that scene, that, like, most, kind of an edited version of that opening sequence at CinemaCon, and it really killed them. You could tell the distributors were just like, the exhibitors were just so like into what they were seeing. I mean, I kind of could have guessed it was going to be a huge hit just from that, because that was literally got the best reaction to anything, like going back to the first Hangover. So I probably should have been a very telling that it was going to be a hit from that.
News!
I don't even want to talk about this, but we have a journalistic duty at this point, and we're not even journalists. Well, Edward is, but we're not. Peter Jackson has confirmed that The Hobbit will now be a trilogy. I am trying so hard to keep an open mind about all of this, and I will preface everything that we're all about to say by one thing. If the movie comes out, I adore the Lord of the Rings movies, and I was obsessive about them for a couple of years. And if The Hobbit is even half as good as Fellowship of the Ring, and it obviously is going to play a lot on nostalgia for the series, and I'm a blubbering mess about it, then obviously everything I'm saying might just be swept under the carpet, and I'll be like, absolutely, two more! I want as many as possible. That may very well happen. On the surface, though, I don't get it. I just don't see it. I think part of the problem for me might be just the fact that it's called The Hobbit. Like, that's the overarching title for the whole trilogy, when clearly this trilogy is not going to be The Hobbit. The Hobbit, obviously, is going to take up a sizable portion of it, but to make a trilogy, to stretch this out, they must be mining so much stuff from the appendices. In fact, they might be just making up a lot of stuff themselves. So it's not The Hobbit. It's like, Well, I don't know why you can't just keep The Lord of the Rings as the main title and then put in subtitle like that, now that you've changed it into another trilogy. I honestly don't understand the thinking behind that. But apart from that, all I can do is just sit back and wait to see what happens here. That obviously, I don't think they're going to change The Hobbit at this point. They have a cut of it. I imagine that it will stay the same. It was never going to end with the whole story complete of that book anyway. We know the dragon fight's not going to be in the first film, which we all want to see. We know the Battle of the Four Armies isn't going to be until, well, I was going to say movie two, but now who the hell knows? Who the hell knows now? And
well, it's funny. I was there at Comic-Con. I was literally like, it was too far away to actually record it, but I was actually standing a few feet away when Peter Jackson was telling journalists that he was thinking of, that they had shot so much extra stuff that might need to make a third movie, because it seems like these movies would have been like 3.5-4 hours each. Otherwise, it might have been like 2 4-hour movies. So I heard him talking about this, and I'm sure that anyone at Warner Brothers, when they heard that, were like, yeah, make 3 movies. That's fine. We'll make more money than we would have with 2 movies, so go ahead. Because no one who sees the first 2 movies is going to just skip the 3rd movie, you assume. The moment he said that,
I knew that it was going to happen. I think you did too, Ed. It's like, oh, he just said it out loud, yeah. It's happening.
Yeah, he must have already been talking to the people at Warner Brothers and saying, you have a lot of material, we can move this big fight to the 3rd movie. But the funny thing is, I'm worried because Lord of the Rings, those 3 books, and each of the books had a very pivotal kind of battle or big set piece kind of thing. Hobbit, you really have to kind of like this first movie might be very, very slow and not a lot of stuff going on if that's the case.
I've always felt that's going to be the complaint with this movie, and we haven't seen it. Obviously, there will be more trailers. At least there'll be at least one more by the time it comes out this Christmas. But yeah, I feel like this is going to be the setup movie, and people are going to say nothing happened.
Yeah. And I like it's funny, I actually still like Fellowship of the Rings better than the other 2 movies. I think that was still a very solid, I think that's still the best of the 3 movies, personally. Mm. But even though there wasn't much action in them, I think it's just the best, but maybe with The Hobbit, because there's not a lot of material to really, stretch out that way, it might be a problem, because I've seen footage from it already, and I feel like there's a lot of talking scenes and a lot of bringing back, having Gollum talking to himself just because everyone likes that from The Lord of the Rings. It's going to be a very boring movie. I don't know.
Well, I will say, to defend your choice to Fellowship of the Ring, I think it's wonderful. I think each movie gets better with each film, personally. And I think all 3 are wonderful films, and the theatrical and extended versions. But Fellowship had a lot of action. I mean, to back you up on that, actually. I would disagree slightly, to keep people's attention. I actually remember when that movie came out, it was kind of a slow burn. Because I remember people saying in my audience, like, oh my god, this is how it ends? And they had to be told, like, no, there's 2 more coming. Oh. And then, it really took, a couple of weeks into the movie's release that people, from your point of view, Ed, but, in my neck of the woods, it took a couple of weeks for people to really start to really get into it. And then the home video came out, and then it really got off. I say take off. The movie did $320 million domestically. That's pretty big taking off, already, just, off the first movie.
It's actually my personal favourite. I think it just depends on which kind of storytelling you prefer, because obviously the first film is focused on one group of characters who stay together. In the second and the third films, the storytelling gets more ambitious. Things start branching off into separate areas. That's part of the reason why I think Dark Knight Rises is not as strong a film, or certainly not as preferred to a film like The Dark Knight, because it's less focused. There's different strands. There's multiple characters. It's all over the place at certain points. And I wonder what the case is going to be with this new trilogy. Hobbit, the first one, An Unexpected Journey, that will be focused. We've got Bilbo and this company of dwarves. After that, what the hell happened? I don't even... I mean, I've not actually read it, so I don't even know, but... And Jamie heads...
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that I think Peter Jackson is trying to avoid, one of the things about the 3 Lord of the Rings movies is that they had so much extra stuff that they have to put on the DVD and kind of create this extended version. I think what he's trying to do is avoiding having to do that again by actually just putting everything theatrical. Because I think that's one of the, I mean, I've seen at least the first 2 extended versions theatrically. And, I think he wants to just put everything on this big screen rather than having to take stuff out to make them shorter, make them more manageable, and then releasing, because if he had 2 movies, he'd have to probably cut them down to 3 hours each, and then release stuff later. So by doing three movies, he basically makes it a little more open so he can actually include everything.
I wouldn't put it past him, though. I mean, remember King Kong? That movie was 3 hours, and then he still did an extended version. I think that's his problem now, is that he just doesn't know. He can't just shoot a movie that's tight anymore. He's just got to shoot all the successive stuff. And, you know, I mean, he certainly got some, I don't want to say backlash, but what's the word? I mean, there was certainly, how should I put this, a certain opinion on King Kong. I loved his King Kong remake. It's got problems, but I really dug it. And then he did, and then, of course, the roof really fell on him when he did Lovely Bones, which is pretty bad. It's certainly an interesting failure, but it's still a failure nonetheless.
Well, King Kong, I thought King Kong was way too long. I thought there was just way too much stuff in it. And I feel like, I think The Hobbit is kind of in danger of having three-hour movies. I mean, for The Hobbit, The Hobbit's a short book. I mean, it's a really fast read. I would be a little worried that he's going to start losing people if he makes each movie just way too long, you know?
Well, the issue I've got now that we're talking about it is that, yeah, it's fine to add stuff and to extended versions or put it all into movies now and not do extended versions. But the issue is, regardless of the running time of the initial trilogy, the reason those films work is not because of added stuff or subtracted stuff. It's because they're all treated as individual films. Now, sure, you need to see all three to understand what's going on, but they all, amazingly enough, given that it was shot back to back, they all have their own tone, style, feel, and look, and they're all about something individually. The first film is about Frodo. It starts with him, it ends with him. The second film is about the world of men, and the hobbits unfortunately do get a little bit sidelined, and they're not actually the most interesting characters in that movie. And then the third film, well, it's about a lot of things, but really, when it comes down to it, it's about Frodo and Sam. And, you know, they were conceived and written that way, I assume, the same way that The Hobbit was written and conceived to function as two movies. And I would hope, given I do think Jackson is a good storyteller, that they were both going to individually be about something. Now, you're going to say, I mean, you can't just... I mean, surely turning two movies to three involves a complete overhaul of the screenplays that you've got, that you've shot. This sounds crazy to me, more than I think about it.
Well, it does, because obviously it means that, like, stuff they shot to be the finale of number two, now it's going to have to get moved back to the end of three. And they're going to have to do some retooling. But maybe, you know, maybe while he's been shooting all these months, maybe that's what he's been planning. But one thing I do know is that I know the whole reason for doing The Hobbit is because he wanted to create something more in the vein of Lord of the Rings, like more in that tone, because The Hobbit is a very different book. It's a little, definitely more kid friendly. It's a little more, you know, kind of like fun and stuff. And I think, you know, maybe in the shooting of the movies, he ended up shooting more than he had written. And maybe there's more stuff that he wants to kind of do now. And maybe he needs the three movies to kind of create that gravitas of the Lord of the Rings that the Hobbit as a book doesn't have.
I will say the one thing I'll add on the topic is, there's no way this is coming out summer 2014. That's not happening. It's gonna be Christmas. I don't know why they said that. That's weird. But, yeah. That's not gonna be enough time to get it done. I don't know why you would put it in the summer. I mean, to me it seems like a placeholder. Oh yeah, they announced that. They were saying that a lot of, I think Variety was saying, like, they were just like saying loosely summer 2014. That's all they said. They didn't have a specific date for the third film. That's what everyone's been saying, but it's like they're not going to put that in the summer. It's safe. It's known for being a Christmas blockbuster. I don't know why they're saying summer, but there's just not going to be enough time to get it done for summer.
Actually, it might be because of the fact they have both the two movies already finished shooting. They've actually finished shooting both movies.
But they're going to go do reshoots to pickups this summer, and they want to add. Like, but they were already doing pickups for the second movie anyway this summer, and now they're going to reschedule it to include the third movie. So it's like, I don't think there's just going to be enough time. And then, though, Jackson, he shoots a lot. Oh, go ahead.
I think it's possible because I think, you know, Warner Brothers had success with having Deathly Hallows, you know, part one and two in the, you know, December and then July. I think by having, I think doing the year between movies, you know, potentially, you know, I think it's better for them to do that, I think. And I think if Peter Jackson's already shot so much stuff that he has enough to consider doing three movies, he'll go back, he'll do like three more months of shooting. I mean, I think 2014 of summer is not, that not, you know, I think it's possible. He probably has a lot of stuff already finished for probably everything done for the first movie. He probably has a lot of stuff done for the second movie. So I think it's okay.
Yeah, Ian McKellen said he saw didn't he say he saw like a rough cut of the first one, Phil?
He did. He did indeed.
Okay. Thought so. And I don't know where they are on the second one. But yeah, it's going to be interesting nonetheless. I'm actually really looking forward to seeing the critical reception of this Unexpected Journey.
But look, there's just one other thing that I need to bring up, and I hate it, but it is the problem with all bloody prequels. If all the trilogy is going to be focused on Bilbo Baggins, then you've got one fundamental flaw, and it's a fundamental flaw that's present right in that teaser trailer. Bilbo says to Gandalf, "Can you promise that I will come back?" And Gandalf says, "No." And the audience shouts, "Yes! Yes, we fucking can! Because we saw you as old age Bilbo at the start of the movie. We can't get emotionally invested in a character that we know is not in jeopardy. Fuck that! Especially for three movies. I'm sorry, Ed."
Yeah, well, I think that it's funny because, yeah, that's the problem. We know he'll never die. So no matter what kind of danger he gets into, he'll never die, ever. And I think people who read The Hobbit, like, years after it came out probably felt the same way. But one of the things I think the problem is going to be is that I think this first movie is going to be excellent. I think the second movie is going to be good and have some good scenes. And I'm worried the third movie is going to be like Matrix Revolutions, where it's just, like, so obvious that they ran out of ideas, they need to wrap it up. And I think it's going to be – I think that's going to be the one that gets hurt. I think the third movie is going to not be as good as the first two. I'm going to say that right now.
Or RoboCop 3. It could be that bad. We never know. But we'll have high hopes. We'll stay optimistic. I'm certainly looking forward to the first one. And obviously, then we can actually start getting into the meat of whether this was a terrible mistake or not. But can't wait to find out. So moving on, Fox has announced now that they have... Well, they basically have three big properties in play at the moment, I would argue. They have the Apes franchise, and they're definitely getting that Rise of the Apes sequel getting made. They have Prometheus, which they swear to God they will make a sequel to, and they've announced that this week, with or without Damon Lindelof as a writer again, and X-Men First Class's sequel. Now, if what Brian Singer tells us is correct, it will, I guess, be called X-Men : Days of Future Past, but, you know, title things change all the time, don't they? So who the hell knows? But I wanted to talk about it specifically to compare X-Men sequel to a Prometheus sequel. There's one, and a Rise of the Apes sequel as well, there's one fundamental difference. X-Men opened softer than the other movies, as we knew it would, but because it was good and people who saw it thought it was awesome, it had legs, and when the sequel opens, I don't know if it's going to open to like $80 or $100 million, but it's going to open stronger and hopefully will have better legs. Depends how clouded the summer's going to be, I guess. On the other hand, you have Prometheus 2. Nobody cares, I believe. Okay, some people are willing to give it a chance. That's great. But on whole, correct me if I'm wrong, the public has flat out rejected Prometheus. You can't make a sequel for less than the first film. We don't live in that world anymore. So a Prometheus 2 is going to cost even more than the first one, which is a horrifying thought. It's going to make less money. To me, it's folly.
See, I disagree, because I loved Prometheus. I actually saw it twice in London while I was there for the junket. And I think one of the biggest problems with Prometheus is that people were mad about it not actually finishing, that it actually ended on a kind of a cliffhanger, you know, setup for another movie. So I think if they, you know, I think a lot of the problems people had were with Lindelof. So if he's gone, but they still have more to tell about this world, well, not the world actually they were on, but the world they're going to, I guess. Spoiler. I think this actually, I don't know, I think they'll get people back. I think, you know, I mean, my big problem with Prometheus was that, and I think a lot of people's problem with Prometheus is that they kind of were expecting an alien prequel, which it kind of was. But I think there's more to be told about these characters, and I think that's going to be in the sequel, which can be done cheaper just because it's going to be a different world, it's going to be different things going on, it's not going to be trying to set itself up as an alien prequel.
I don't think there's going to be a sequel to it. I mean, that article that this all originated to, it was from Hollywood Reporter, and, you know, they're a great site and shit, but it was kind of very, very, you read the terminology of what Fox told them, and it was very, wasn't the kind of language that you hear when a movie is successful, and it's kind of like, there's that no shit Sherlock attitude when they send out a press release, like, of course we're doing another one. It was very much a, they use some weird bullshit terms like, well, we're actively pursuing the possibility of another one. There's some weird shit like that. And it was very half-glass full kind of talk. Yeah, Lindelof won't be back. They pretty much all but said that. I don't know. I don't think as Phil said, I don't think the reception was as good. I'm with Ed. I like the movie. I actually loved that it didn't answer any questions and it left it for you, the individual, to answer them yourself. Like, you know, where do we come? Not so much where do we come from, but why do they want to kill the humans? And what did we do to you? You know, those are universal, fundamental questions that there is no easy answer to.
I think it's up to Ridley Scott. I think if Ridley Scott wants to do another one, because it's funny, because I think the time it took him to make Prometheus after Alien, we're talking about like
35 years,
yeah. The fact that he decided to come back after all that time, he definitely seemed to enjoy making the movie. I think he enjoyed like kind of exploring that world. And I think, you know, it's made $310 million worldwide compared to $130 million production budget. That's before DVD and Blu-ray and before, you know, being on TV or cable. I think, you know, I think if Ridley Scott wants to do another one, and if he can get another one made, I mean, they already have plots for two more movies. They've already, you know, fleshed out. I mean, there was always planned for more movies. And I think if he wants to do it, and if they can get a good script going for a second movie, they're going to make it. And maybe it'll probably cost maybe the same amount. But I think with you know, cable and DVD and Blu-ray, I think it'll be worthwhile to make a sequel to it.
Oh, it's going to be a seller, I don't deny it, but, I mean, you guys have got to agree with me on this, surely, that, you know, the reception has not been warm to this film.
No, it's not. It's been terrible.
People don't like it.
Word of mouth's terrible in that movie. Yeah,
I mean, I could compare it to, for example, Star Trek The Motion Picture, where you had a movie that cost a fortune, but made a fortune, and but was not very well warmly received, and then, you know, the studio's like, well, what could we salvage out of this? Can we do another one? Of course we can, but we'll make it for peanuts. And you make it for peanuts, and you actually make a great movie, and people
but
give it a chance.
We don't live in that
You can't make a sequel for less than the original. So I just literally don't understand. You must also agree with me that whenever it comes out, it's going to open. It's not going to open bigger than the first film, and the first film didn't open particularly spectacularly either.
For what it was, it opened great. A hard R-rated sci-fi horror movie that wasn't necessarily fully selling itself as an Alien prequel to the general public. Yeah, it did good under those circumstances, but generally speaking, no.
But how much of a negative reception is it because people were expecting an Alien prequel and the Alien part was just like thrown in at the very end? I think that's part of the problem.
People just didn't dig it, to be honest.
Because they were expecting an Alien movie and it wasn't an Alien movie, and that's the problem. Try to squeeze out an Alien movie. I mean, it takes place in that world, but it has very, very little to do with aliens. And the fact they tried making even that little alien thing at the end.
That was terrible.
That's what killed the movie for them. That's what killed the reception, because if they hadn't put that little alien thing at the end, people would have been furious, but it also would mean that, like, it would not have, I think that made it worse. It rubbed it in, like, yeah, here's your alien. Okay, haha, next movie.
Honestly, Edward, just speaking from my perspective, by the time I went into the movie, the word of mouth was already out and it was very, very confusing. So I went in with no expectations. I wiped my brain clean of what I was expecting. And the reason I didn't care for it, and I didn't hate it as much as people I've talked to, but I was indifferent towards, and it was simply due to the fact that I didn't care about anyone or anything that happened in it. So, you know, I'll see the sequel because, you know, we do what we do, but it's not because I'm dying to see what happens next. I could care less, and I think that's the perspective of a hell of a lot of people. You're not going to be interested in seeing a sequel if you're not interested in where the story's going next.
Yeah, but I gotta say, I love Naomi Rapace's character. I love David, the robot. I actually saw the movie. I was like one of the first people to see the movie. I gotta say, I saw it before any negative reception got out there. I saw it, like, you know, before the junket. I was probably one of the first, like, 50, 60 people outside Fox to see it. And I liked it enough that 2 days later, I went to see it again. I didn't have to see it again. I could have been, like, just hanging out in London doing whatever I wanted. But I said, I want to see this movie again because I want to see if it really lived up, you know, if it really was as good as I remember it. And 2 days later, and I haven't seen it a third time yet. But believe me, if I had time, I would have seen it a third time. I really liked it a lot. So.
Well, let's move on then. That was more of an interesting debate than I thought we were going to have on that. I really didn't expect you to feel that way, Edward, but that's cool. Make sure we have you on when that sequel comes out, or doesn't.
Have you you read my reviews, if you see, I think I gave Kim the Kingdom of Heaven a 9. I think I gave Robin Hood like pretty high up there, maybe an 8 or I don't know. I'll definitely be defending Ridley Scott until my grave.
And so it's your fault I went to see Robin Hood. You owe me 12 bucks, sir.
I actually had to turn down an interview with James Cameron to see Robin Hood.
So, oh,
you couldn't have known.
That is loyalty. That is loyalty.
I'm sure he understood. Well, moving on then. Oh boy, it's Skyfall time, everybody!
We didn't talk about X-Men First Class. Are we just?
Oh shit, we didn't, did we? Oh fuck it.
That says it all, folks. Good night.
Well, no, we have sort of mentioned it before, folks. But I mean, all I can say is that all I can say about it is that, you know, I'm excited. I think it's going to be. I have full confidence in this one. I think when X-Men hits, it really hits. You have something that is more interesting and intellectually stimulating than anything else in the Marvel film universe. And I think that finally we're going to get Sentinels, lots of them. It's a great story for a reason. All of the struggle that Xavier and Magneto have had throughout the original trilogy and in X-Men First Class was all hypothetical. And you could forgive the audience who aren't familiar with the comics in saying, well, look, you've just got to live with it. Humanity's going to hate you. You know, that's never going to change. You're fighting a pointless battle. And Days of Future Past is the story that says, no, this is what happens if we fail. We're all fucked, and it's really, really bad. And I think it's a necessary story to tell. And
well,
you know,
I mean, it's
I can't wait.
Yeah, it's a great story, but I mean, it's one of the stories that you do for a comic book or a cartoon, which they did, obviously, because there's following this continuity that Brian Singer established and the verisimilitude of the series. There's really nothing so far that's been set up to suggest time travel. And what this clearly is, and there is not a doubt in my mind on this one, is they are trying to Star Trek the franchise now. They're gonna fuck with the timeline so they can now have a complete clean slate continuity-wise to do whatever they want. I feel like this is gonna be the movie where you see, like, Michael Fassbender standing next to Anna Paquin and Hugh Jackman and whoever plays Colossus fighting Sentinels. It's going to be this weird mishmash timeline it's a can of worms, man. But it's so obvious that that's what they're doing here. And the thing about it and I remember Drew McWeeny leaked the plot development of Star Trek and said, this is how they're going to reboot it, guys. They're going to have their cake and eat it too. And we all thought it was terrible. Me especially. I thought it was the dumbest fucking idea possible. And yet the movie came out, and I love the Star Trek reboot. It's great. But if you notice, the time travel stuff kind of gets, you know, it gets pushed under the rug. It's just a little plot device that makes it all possible. But there was clearly a story they were trying to tell that it fit into.
But one of the things that, like, First Class took place in the 60s.
Right.
Days of Future Past is not going to take place in present day. It's probably going to take place either in the 70s or the 80s. It's not going to go too far in the future because you don't want to – because obviously they have the younger, the younger Professor X and the younger Magneto. So it's not going to go too far. So basically, where are they going to time travel from? The future is the movies that Brian Singer made. That's the future. So they're going to try to – so the thing is, I mean – we don't know if they're going to have Wolverine at all. I mean,
they will.
I wouldn't be so sure about that because they still want to keep focused on those four characters. Getting Hugh Jackman back for a major role would cost them probably like $30 million or $25-30 million right there.
I think they'll do it though. I think that's part of what Brian said about how ambitious it is.
I know, but the thing is, what I've been told is that they want to keep the period piece aspect of First Class. They want to focus on those, four or five characters from First Class. Kitty Pryde, they're not going to bring back Ellen Page.
No.
She's not coming back. So what do they have left? I mean, they have, and then that was of the comic books, that was a major part of the comics. It was like, it opened with, Logan and Kitty Pryde in the future in what the world looked like. But in the Brian Singer world, the future is what we already saw in the first three movies. So it's really kind of, they were really going to have to mess with a lot of things to make this work.
It's the not too distant future, which of course suggests that mutants naturally age slower. So I can talk to Ed about this. God bless you, bud. I love you. I could talk up to you about this. Phil doesn't know. I don't think he does. But it sounds like what they might be doing is like in the back of your mind saying, are they going to turn this into Age of Apocalypse? Which would be horrible. But you got to wonder, are they going to really do that? Which, if you guys don't know, Age of Apocalypse was a story art of an alternative timeline where Professor Xavier is not around, and it's actually Eric Lyncher who forms the X-Men. Well, I say Lencher, it's Magnus, but Lencher's a better name.
I think Age of Apocalypse is the third movie. I think I wait with Age of Apocalypse for the third movie, but that's...
They might.
That gets way too confusing. Actually, Philip, I don't know if you want to jump in here, he actually suggested doing Bishop, and I think Bishop would be a good idea, actually.
Bishop was, because in the comic it was Kitty Pryde, and then they did the animated series, they said, nah, let's get someone else, and they made it Bishop who comes back, and it's Gambit who kills Senator Kelly, which now it's like, well, who are they going to kill? You talked about it might be 70s or 80s. I assumed it would be the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah.
But the moment Vaughn gave that plot detail out, you go like, okay, well, that's not going to be the movie because you just blabbed it. Like, if you really were going to do that, you wouldn't be saying it for the movie comes out. Now, would you?
Say something, Philly.
Well, all I was going to say is to pick up something that Jamie was saying about Star Trek, the fact that when it came down to it, the time travel wasn't really a big deal. You know, it was just a plot device, and I completely agree with you. I have every reason to believe that the X-Men movie is going to be exactly the same thing. You've got to remember something very specifically about X-Men First Class. Not only did it take place in the 60s, it took place at a time in history before mutants had been exposed to the world. This is the follow-up to that. Now the prejudice begins, and I think that's going to tie beautifully into Days of Future Past. You just address it head-on. It could take place a decade later when things have already gone to pot, and then you just jump forward into the future and you say, you think it's bad now? Wait till we get a few decades down the line, then you'll see just how bad it gets. I just can't wait. I mean, I just think this is the final piece of the story that they really needed to tell for us to consider X-Men to be a complete series. I mean, it hasn't been as complete as I thought. I'm one of those people who always thought you could just crank out movie after movie 3 years, but, you know, they haven't done that. We've still got the Wolverine to look after, that chink that's still coming, whether we like it or not. They finally started filming, believe it or not. That's the only reason I don't think Wolverine's going to be in this one, except for another cameo. I don't think he'll be...
A cameo.
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah, I like your idea of doing Bishop. They could do Cable. They have a lot of things they could do. But you know what? If they want to really show how bad the future's going to be, they should just sit them down and show them The Last Stand. And then the whole plot can be they can go after Brett Ratner for making that movie so bad.
Don't get Jamie started,
Jeff. Oh, I knew I was started, but like, yeah, that's...
No, Ed knows my stance on that movie. I've said it many times on Twitter. I don't blame Ratner. I blame Vaughn in the studio. Or not so much Vaughn, but, you know.
You partly blame Vaughn.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if they're going to have something from the future,
right,
would it have to be a future after Last Stand, or would that be the future? Because it's interesting, because they do say, I mean, again, you got to remember, I sat down with the writer of X-Men Days of Future Past, and I talked to him, and he said they're going to keep the period piece part, they're going to focus on those five characters, and he kept on saying that they want to try to tie it into those other three movies, and that's the only way they could do that, is if they, you know, bring at least one of the characters from those other three movies from the future, which, you know...
If we're speculating now, who would it be? Who from the earlier movies would come into the 60s/70s via time travel? Who would it be? Just if we're guessing.
God, I don't know. It can't be Cyclops. Well, it could be Cyclops. You know, but you know what? Maybe it gives them an option to do some more cameos like Cyclops and like some of those other things. I don't know. They have a lot of things they could do, which is...
I feel like that's why they're going to clean slate it with the continuity-wise, as I said, Star Trek it, because then they can literally do whatever they want. And they still have McAvoy, Fassbender, Lawrence, although I wonder if Lawrence... I'm so surprised that she did not weasel her way out of her contract. I never saw her coming back. I am. I never thought she was coming back. We all knew that, like, we knew Hunger Games was going to do really well, not 400 domestic well. I never saw that coming. But I thought it'd do like maybe 150, 200 domestic, a big hit. And the point with it, it was like, oh, she's going to get out of her contract. And it's like, no, she's going to be in the sequels, or at least this sequel.
Do you know who won't be in it, I bet? January Jones. January Jones. They will find any way possible to write her out of it completely. Even if not, they don't put her in there, just pretend she just didn't exist. I bet she won't be in the movie.
Oh, there will be many reasons why she's not in the movie. Yeah. Wink, wink.
I hope Rose Byrne comes in back, though. I hope more Taggart comes back, maybe in a little bigger role. But, yeah, she'll be gone.
I always got the impression, just off my own speculation, whatever sequel is going to be, like, before this whole timeline thing got thrown into the mix, but they said they were going to do a sequel, I was like, oh, well, it would probably be only McAvoy and Fassbender, because those were clearly the two strengths of the movie. Not knocking the other actors, but... they were the movie, those two guys. Like, it was just like, when they're together, you were focused in on the whole film. And when they weren't, you're like, where's McAvoy and Fassbender? I want to see those guys together again.
But they're going to make Jennifer Lawrence a big part, because she's a big star, and they kind of have to. But
the nice thing about Lawrence is it's not going to feel like a kind of a forced Halle Berry situation where she's getting more screen time because she demanded it. Jennifer Lawrence would get more screen time regardless, because she was the third best character in that film. Best written character, most interesting character. She had an arc, you know, and there's still further to go. You know, I was thinking about this the other day, how we had an argument at the time we reviewed the movie. I remember Jamie and I was saying how when Xavier gets shot at the end of the movie, I would have really liked it if Mystique had just walked past him and knocked him, just been completely cold about it. Because if you remember, in X-Men 1, and I was trying to think about this, is there any point in the initial trilogy where Mystique and Xavier actually come into contact? And there isn't. But there is that scene in X-Men 1 where Mystique goes to the mansion. No, there isn't, actually. I looked. Definitely not. But there is that one scene in X-Men 1 when she goes to the mansion and she sabotages Cerebro, knowing that Xavier will use it. And I was like, okay, the Mystique at the end of X-Men First Class would not do that. She still likes the guy. They just have a difference of opinion.
She loves him.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's still a lot further to go with that relationship. You know it's going to get poisoned more, you know, and I can't wait to see how it develops. I mean, they had a wonderful bond.
Yeah, I think a lot of what they're going to do in the sequels is to kind of try to tie it into those three movies, because I think that was one of the big things that kind of lost me in First Class, is there was a very obviously points where it was no way it could be the same characters from those other three movies, and I think they're going to try to use time travel and use other things to try to make them fit together more better, I think.
Right.
When's this coming out, this Days of Future Past? Does anybody even know?
Summer 14.
Late July of 2014, which is a very, to me, actually when I saw that release date, I was like, that's interesting. They must have something, because that is a great release date to have. You either want to be the first movie of the summer in the first weekend of May, or you want to be the middle end of July, because that means you dominate for the rest of the summer.
Well,
Warner Brothers loves that slot. I mean, they're dominating right now with Dark Knight Rises. They dominated a year ago with Harry Potter, then with Inception, and, you know,
That means it's going head to head with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, 2 weeks later, yeah. Guardians opens 2 weeks later, yeah.
Well, you know, I'm kind of in.
You don't have faith in that one, do you? It's a bit loony, but I can't wait for it.
It's loony, exactly. You just said it. I'm like, people are gonna be like, I mean, you know what's gonna be? It's Marvel, so people will go with it. But
I think Guardians of the Galaxy. I think Guardians of the Galaxy is like Thor. I think it'll be like a 6 million opener, maybe less. And I think X-Men will be fine. X-Men movies have always made all their money in the first two weekends.
That's right.
You know, they don't need the third weekend. They can do a 75 and then like a 35 and be fine.
I just think it's interesting that they're going back to July. They did that with the first one, and it was a last minute decision. They were halfway through filming and they just told Singer, "Oh, by the way, you're moving to July now."
Yeah.
And it's what?
An extra 6 months. Thank you. No.
Yeah, exactly. That's what he thought. You heard the story too. Yeah. And, you know, but every other movie's been May, so it's interesting that, like, they're going back to July now, which, you know, again, I'm just surprised that, I'm still surprised that they put Wolverine there, not Superman, but that's another topic for another day.
Moving on then to, staying focused on this year, this October, because that's when we, in the UK, get motherfucking Skyfall, yo! I'm not the kind of person who, you know, looks at a trailer and immediately says, yeah, this is going to be awesome. Except right now, Skyfall is going to be fucking awesome. Now, I do want to address one criticism that I've read in some comment sections about people looking at the trailer. There were two trailers, the international and the domestic. And the criticism that I have heard is that, oh, I feel like I've just seen the whole movie. A couple of points to address to that. Number one, shut up. Number two, let's make that determination once we've, I don't know, seen the whole movie. You might be right about that, but let's just wait and see. Number three, shut up. Okay, apart from that, I just can't wait to see it. I mean, certainly it tells you what the initial plot is going to be. It might have been great to actually, the shooting of James Bond on M's fucking orders be a surprise in the film, but I doubt they could have kept that under wraps. As it is, it's a fantastic hook. I do think the domestic trailer is much better than the international, because in the domestic, that shot has a real impact. That's how you start, yes. And that's a hook. It's like, holy fuck, you just killed James Bond! Is that who it was? And that's great, and it sort of lends credibility there. I don't know if Naomi Harris is playing Moneypenny. She might be telling the truth. She might just be playing this girl called Eve. Who the hell knows? And you've got a bit of Q, and you've got Javier Bardem. Spaniards should never be blondes. It just looks wrong. And
that's why he's evil.
Well, it's not just that he's a blonde. He is wearing Christopher Walken's wig from A View to a Kill. He wants it back. It's just damn weird. I have more to say about this, about the plot specifically, but Edward, please, say it. Go ahead.
Well, what's funny, the other time I went to London this year was for Skyfall, and the worst set visit I've ever been to, and I'll say it publicly, because I didn't know, I left that place, I was there for 2 days at Pinewood, and I didn't know anything about the movie whatsoever. It was just so crazy that they could keep even so much a secret. I mean, I don't even know why I went there. It was just such a ridiculous thing to go to the set for 2 days and not know anything. And it's funny because this trailer does kind of give a few plot points, but I think there's actually a lot more there. Like, I think there's so much more to the story that, like, we won't find out. Like, maybe there's a couple of hints thrown in there, but I think we're getting a few, I think there's a few, like, what do they call it? Oh God, I can't remember, my brain farts. But basically, I feel like they're throwing a few things our way which are not what they're going to be. Like, maybe they're trying to throw us off.
I thought that too, because like the shot where he gets quote unquote killed, we don't know. She might not be aiming at Bond. That's the whole thing. I was like, oh my God, she killed James Bond. Like, well, she might be aiming at the bad guy. And that was my whole time. I was like, we're not so certain about that. In fact, that could be part of the plot, is that they're trying to shoot the bad guy, they shoot Bond, and they're like, God damn, we better cover this up. This don't look good.
And what's that? Remember that in the sorry to interrupt, Phil, but remember that first teaser where they had him in the room, doing the word association thing.
Yes.
When does that happen? Before he gets shot, or after? Where does that little thing happen?
I'm assuming after.
Yeah.
Actually, do you guys know what Skyfall is? It's the name of his family's estate.
Oh, I didn't know that. No.
Yeah, they said that somewhere, and apparently I just blew it. Oops. <All right. laughs>
No, that's great. No, I have a theory about this. I can at least piece part of the puzzle together, and I could be completely wrong, but it's interesting how Ralph Fiennes' character says at the start that M has lost this database which lists all the deep cover operatives, which is the exact same plot as the first Mission Impossible film. The thing that they were all chasing in that movie was this list which had the identities of all the undercover operatives basically in Europe, I think, and they needed to stop it getting into the hands of terrorists, and of course evil John Voight was actually the one who was stealing the damn thing in the first place, and he had, I liked that movie very much, so I remember all the lines of dialogue. There was a line of dialogue he had in that film where he said, if these agents are exposed, they'll be executed. And even back then I was thinking, what, you mean you'll execute them? The good guys will, the intelligence community will actually kill their own agents to stop them being exposed or compromised or anything? And I think that's what's happening here. I think it's like, well, even if we fake their deaths, we've basically got to terminate the entire intelligence community here. And that is the kind of level of fuck up where, yeah, someone else like Ralph Fiennes would come in and say, yeah, Em, you're fired. We're taking over, which is clearly, what's happening here. And what I love more than that, there's a line that Ralph Fiennes has to Bond. Well, we assume it's to Bond, but I think it is going to be the case where he says, you didn't have to come back. And I think that's kind of be what the movie's about. It's about this sense of duty and loyalty that Bond has for some reason to Queen and Country that's always defined the character, no matter what shit he's been put through. And I think this film's going to directly address that.
Except, I get the impression it's about him as an orphan. He doesn't have anybody else. So it's like there's that great line where she goes, like, they go for maladjusted young men who are orphans who give no problem with sacrificing other people to save Queen and Country.
I actually liked the trailer a lot. I actually was very excited. And I actually think that, I actually said this on Twitter, I think that it will be the first Bond movie to start getting serious Oscar consideration. Because I think you have these really good actors, and you put them in the situations where it's, really shows them as good actors, it might actually be considered awards worthy.
You say that. There was a point, and I'm back in 06, when Craig was getting such rage for that movie, I really thought he could. It was such a slow enough year at the end of 06. I was like, he could squeeze out an Oscar nom for this performance, because it was like he got the kind of raves in Casino Royale that you give like a dramatic performance and not an action movie that he got for that flick.
Yeah, but this year they have nothing. This year they have there's so little that people are talking about Oscar wise now. By the time November comes around, people might get desperate.
I think it's going to be the. I mean, not to get too ahead of ourselves. I'm not one of those people that's against Lincoln. Lock it in. I actually think it'll be The Master.
I do think Edward has a point on one level, Jamie, and it's that the Academy not necessarily always recognizes the film, but they recognize the talent that's attached to it. For example, if you could possibly imagine a situation where Martin Scorsese directed a Bond film, you know that would be on the running list, no matter what. No matter what, that would be on the running list. Now, here we have Sam fucking Mendes. Sam Mendes is extremely well respected. You have, you know, Roger Deakins shooting the thing. You have Academy Award winning screenwriter John Logan, the writer of Hugo, also writer of Star Trek Nemesis, but the writer of Hugo, my favorite film of last year, is writing it. Shame it's not Peter Morgan as well, but I'll live. And of course you've got this cast, you know, a few Oscar winners in there.
It's the classiest Bond cast we've ever seen. That's what's so amazing to me. I mean,
notice though who's missing from the trailer.
Help.
Albert Finney.
Oh, him. Yeah, that guy.
Yeah. So there's definitely Edward's right on something. There's definitely more to it because Albert Finney is nowhere to be seen, and we still don't know who he's playing.
Maybe he's playing like his uncle or something. I don't know.
Maybe he's playing his character from Bourne. They'll tie it together. Maybe there's a tie between MI5 and Dreadstone.
That'd be awesome, actually. Then we could see Jason Statham in one, because I love me some David Statham. I love David Statham.
I just hope it's. I just hope it's not a situation like Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, where we're like, who's Jim Broadbent playing? And it's just like, oh, he's just Marcus for 10 minutes.
Oh, that's right.
Worry about it.
I don't think Albert Finney's role is going to be small. I have this feeling it's going to be a smaller role.
I think I read, actually, in this week's issue of Entertainment Weekly, they said he was playing someone from Bond's past. That's all they said.
His father?
Wouldn't he be kind of old to be his dad? But he is Albert Finney. I don't know. Well, of course.
Are you kidding me? Albert Finney would be perfect age to be his dad, actually.
Well, no, sir. His dad is dead.
Oh.
He's an orphan, you know. Well, you know, it's funny.
Do we know he's an orphan? Where do we hear he's an orphan?
In the first one? In Royale?
And in Goldeneye?
Did you mention that? I don't remember that. Okay.
Oh, yeah, they mentioned Royale that he's an orphan.
His parents died in a climbing accident or something.
I know, but he could have been lying to her. Come on, they could have just been making small talk.
He didn't lie to her. She figured it out with him. Like, she's like, oh, you're an orphan. And he just doesn't say, oh, no, he says, oh, you're an orphan because he can read people. He says, like, I can read people. That's why he's good at poker. He says, I can read people well. I look at them. I can size them up just like that. I know them. And, like, he.
I like James. We named the dog James. I don't want that.
There we go. Wow. We're doing all those Indiana. Let's not bring up Indiana Jones again, because I think if they're already getting to the point of being as bad as some of the Indiana Jones movies, they're in big trouble. But I don't think so. I don't think they are.
Some of them. Are we implying that Temple of Doom is bad or something here?
I still think Raiders of the Ark could have been a really great movie if they just kept it that as the only movie. And I don't know. There's a lot of stuff they did afterwards which was bad. So. But I don't think it's gonna be the case with Bond though.
I hope not. I guess the last question actually I would like to have, because you're here, Ed, and you're getting along great with us. It's great having you here. Thanks for coming again. Do you think this will be Craig's last movie? Because I still do.
No, I think he'll do one more. They already have one slated for 2014. That'll be his last movie, and then he's done. That's what I think. I think Skyfall will do huge business.
Yes.
It'll lead to another movie, and they'll try to wrap another movie. And then I think they'll take 4 or 5 years off and then try to, you know, figure out what to do next.
And you know why it's going to be huge? Not to interrupt you, Phil, real quick, but it's because it's been 4 years, and it's been long enough that people kind of gotten out of the system, and they're like, I want to see Craig's Bond again, God damn it, because we forget that he was very popular as James Bond.
And the, I don't know, because I've been playing the ending of this film in my head, and I have a theory how the ending's going to play, and I feel like it's going to be so perfect as an ending to Craig's tenure, and so brilliant as a setup for the next actor, that it will be a perfect place to end on, and then it's going to be up to him to decide whether he wants to potentially ruin that by continuing. Obviously, I mean, we've talked about this before, but they're bringing in the Bond family. I truly believe by the end of this, I don't know if they're going to kill Judi Dench's M, but we're going to have a new head of MI6. No doubt about that. We've got Q, and I still believe that Naomi Harris is playing their version of a Moneypenny who could be a constant addition to the series. And I think at the end of this movie, we're going to have that family established. We're going to have things pretty much status quo as they were back in the Roger Moore days, where he goes into that lovely office with the wooden brown panels and, you know, gets his new assignments, and it's going to be like, well, you know, either that's the end because James Bond has been, as we know and love him, has now been completely created, and that's a good place for Craig to end his tenure and bring in a new guy, or he might decide, well, I'm having fun, I've got one more in me, but that's the ending I see in my mind.
That won't happen. They'll establish the family. In this movie, and people will like that family enough, they'll want to see it back together again. They'll want to see, whether or not it's themed Judi Dench, they'll want to see more of Daniel Craig with Ralph Fiennes. They'll want to see more of him with, you know, some of the other characters. And I think, I mean, Daniel Craig, I'm pretty sure, has signed on to a movie, and I'm pretty sure he wants to do another movie. And the fact they have another movie, you know, set up for 2 years from now means they already kind of know they're going to do another movie with him, and then they'll do another break and figure out what to do next.
And then we can just, like, cast someone who we've never heard of. Oh, well, actually, no. They'll go with someone who we do expect.
It'll be Taylor Lautner. Taylor Lautner will be the next James Bond.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say, actually. You just ruined it from me. God damn it. No.
I spoiled the future for you.
I know. Jesus. Yeah, spoilers for the future. Well, I mean, you know, you think about it. You don't get to say anything else now.
You've completely ruined all hope and joy out of the Bond franchise, period. By the way,
Philip, that Taylor Lautner, James Bond, you guys are going to get 2 months early. So you're going to get to see it 2 months
you
early.
You can have it, if that's what you're going to inflict on us.
No. All the bad movies you guys should get first, that's what I say.
Oh, thank you very much, thank you.
Not all the good movies, you guys get all the good movies first, I don't know why that is.
Well, we'll tell you, of course, how good Skyfall is at the end of October, 2 weeks before Jamie.
Phil's going to see it at a press screening, no less, with Robert.
Well, that's the plan.
Oh, okay. You know. I'm not trying to jinx it. I'm just, I mean...
You bastard!
No, I'm not!
But the thing is, also, Phil, remember, they might chunk it in New York. If they chunk it in New York, I'll be seeing it before you guys, so...
Boom.
Oh, that's fine, sir, because I respect you. It's, you know, I don't respect
it. Or if they chuck it in London, I'll try to get it to go back to London. I'll see it in London before it opens there, so.
Can't wait. And on that joyous note, that is it for tonight. We'll be back next week. Those guys are seeing Bourne. Can't wait to find out what that's like. As I said, we've also got a lovely piece on RoboCop 2 for you, which I know you can't wait to watch. All that remains to be said is that, Edward, this has been delightful. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks. Thanks so much for having me. It took me a little while to get into the flow of things, but I think I got into the flow of things eventually.
That's the power of X-Men and James Bond. That's what it does. We should do this every week. Well, Jamie, yeah, thanks. Thanks for coming.
What else would I do with my life?
I just enjoyed being a dick to him this week. I don't know why.
Exactly.
And we'll see you guys next week. Until then, the balcony is closed.